Over this past week, the leaders from the UU Church of Boulder came for a visit as they wanted to see about our sanctuary set up, as in our providing sanctuary, not this sanctuary. You might remember that last Sunday, Boulder was going to vote to be a sanctuary congregation. Well, they did vote to be a sanctuary congregation, and so they are, like we were a few weeks ago, post-vote but pre-guest. So they were here trying to get all the details worked out in advance of that potential guest. We talked logistics and procedures from volunteer coordination to decoding grocery lists to building use and security, everything, all of these details and everything in between. And in the midst of this, with their eyes getting bigger and bigger and their note-taking getting furiouser and furiouser, I realized suddenly that we were teaching them all the wrong lessons. Because mostly what Sanctuary has taught us so far is that although you may have lots of plans and procedures, by the time you get going, you'll already know more than your procedure says, and your procedure just suddenly seems kind of short-sighted or maybe even overly contrived. This is not, it turns out, the kind of work that goes according to plan. There's too much change happening all at once, and too many people who care a lot, which is a good thing, but each person has just a tiny bit, as we say in the beginning, a little bit of the truth. Not everyone has all of the information. So I told our friends from Boulder that the best thing we could offer to them right now, that they should write down in their notes, is to let go of whatever perfectionist tendencies they have. Embrace instead the idea that when things get messy or confusing, that's actually a sign you're succeeding. Because it means you're learning and growing. And that's all any of us can really do in this sort of work. Because we're building the way as we go. This has been such an important reframe for us this year, in Sanctuary and in the whole of the year, since the election did what it did, and as the world has seemed often upside down. Last November, it was almost a year ago now, the sanctuary was just about as full, if not fuller, then. I remember thinking, I said it a lot, we need a new plan. All plans from the past were for a different world than what we're facing now. We need a new plan. But since then, I've realized we don't need a new plan. We need new skills and new adaptive capacity. We need to get clearer about our values, and we need new and more partners and new relationships. We need to be willing to tread into places and experiences that we've never been before, even though that means that often we will do a lot of things wrong. We need to respond simply with faithfulness, even when the outcome is unclear and uncertain. Because in this time, too much is in flux and at stake. We don't need a new plan. We just need to learn how to grow into this moment as it is still evolving. This mode of ministry and life, where discomfort and disorientation are a sign that we're doing something right, is based in a learning theory that psychologists and teachers call the zone of proximal development. Some of you teachers out there know what I'm talking about. It means simply that place where you are in just the right amount uncomfortable and disoriented, and that's where learning can happen. Too much discomfort, and instead of growth, you experience frustration, resistance, you give up. Too little, and you're basically just repeating what you already know. Growth requires that we live in just the right amount outside of our comfort zone. Providing sanctuary for Ingrid has reminded me of this, but not most of all because of the logistics and details, but even more because providing sanctuary to Ingrid has also meant providing sanctuary to Anibal, her 2-year-old son. I think it's coming. That's Anibal. Anibal is actually one of the unexpected parts of providing sanctuary, because you might remember, many of you were here for the vote. Remember what we said? We're like, okay, we know our limits. We can provide sanctuary to one adult. But then, and so now integrated into our day are high fives and giggles, and also cries and running away and some really amazing temper tantrums. Because being 2, you might remember, if you don't have a 2-year-old around in your life right now, means that constant dance of the too much and then not enough discomfort. And the wanting to be already knowing what it's not quite time yet to know. And then trying it anyway. Which is to say, being 2 is the living, breathing embodiment of the zone of proximal development. Anibal reminds us all that sanctuary and life and our work together is not actually about being already ready to do a hard thing, already grown, but about continually finding ways to grow into this moment and the new thing it's asking us to be and do and become now. As transcendentalist Margaret Fuller says, I put on the quote on the front of your program today, the only thing to do in life is to grow. Last summer, the board and I went on retreat to start my new ministry, our new ministry partnership together. It's a tradition for any first-year settled minister. But because I was in my first, which was also my 5th year here, we were able to go deeper and be a little more real, I think, than maybe you might otherwise in your very first meeting between board and minister. We were past the honeymoon phase, I think. So we quickly moved into some more honest conversation about this congregation, where we've been and where we might be going together. We talked about the unspoken rules of our congregation, things that the system wanted or didn't want from its minister, but wouldn't say directly. And then we got even braver, and we talked about taboos. That is, the stuff that the system wouldn't want anyone to talk about ever at all. The list of our taboos in our church isn't too long, and by the end we realized it mostly came down to 2 words that both started with G. Can you guess what they are? Well, the first one we just finished a series on, God. And today we're picking up the other one for the series we're launching today on growth. God and growth. I'm not really a big believer in avoiding taboos, it turns out. At first, you might not think that these 2 things are related, that these are 2 random topics that our community just historically has decided it doesn't like to talk about, but I've come to realize that this resistance actually comes from a connected place. Both growth and God, after all, require us to venture out to some uncomfortable, confusing places. Both ask us to connect with something beyond ourselves, to be for something beyond what we can precisely see or name or control. And both engage a notion of co-creation, inviting us into the mystery of what is both already and not yet. In the retreat conversation, as you may have surmised, the growth that we shall not name was at least in our explicit conversation there about our church growing. For a long time, I would hear the question, maybe you still hear it sometimes in various church gatherings, well, do we even want to grow? I understand. I mean, growth is scary and stressful. As Margie said in her chalice lighting, it can be upsetting. Different sizes of communities relate differently to each other. And it can be extremely hard. It can feel like a loss, even while you're actually gaining quite a bit. But it can feel like in that change, you're losing something. Because who are all these strangers? There's a lot in Unitarian Universalism that would indicate that we'd be open to growth, individual or communal. Our third principle says we're committed to spiritual growth in our congregations. And our fourth talks about an ongoing search for truth and meaning. And specific to our church, Foothills, our mission statement describes that one of our core reasons for being is to grow our faith. At the same time, however, I wonder how many times you've heard, or maybe you've said, about your journey to this congregation or to this faith. How nice it feels to be at home with like-minded people. Unitarian Universalism has been, for many of us, a refuge from a challenging world that can often feel so isolating and even threatening at times. This was especially a strong impulse for our churches in the 1980s with the rise of the religious right and the newly established coalition of evangelical Christianity with the Republican Party. And then this same sort of impulse, I actually think, has been at work for many newcomers that have found us in this past year or so, maybe today, as the culture has become increasingly polarized and the world exhausting and overwhelming. Coming to church feels like safe, a safe place to relax and rest, to see people we know and trust, people we know are on the same page, and to have them see us, to not feel like we're on the start of some new path, but to feel like we've arrived, we can settle in. Church is not where you want to come to have yet another thing that's confusing or uncomfortable, even though we do know. So last year, a small group of our lay leaders, along with Sean and Eleanor and I, we attended an incredible workshop led by a Christian-based presenter on precisely these sorts of questions. Why and how do people grow in a faith community? A lot of the information was really helpful. It was particularly oriented towards life today. But their core answer for what growing in faith for Christians meant wasn't immediately translatable to our community and our tradition. And we realized we weren't immediately clear ourselves what our answer would be. What does it mean to grow in faith as a Unitarian Universalist? And what would someone mature in their Unitarian Universalist faith look like? How would they get there? So to discover our answers, we met regularly for about 10 months. We had a regular table over at the coffee shop on Elizabeth Mamalolo. Sometimes we left our notes up on the whiteboard. It was like our own little secret evangelism out there. I actually think somebody came, two people came, because they saw the notes on the whiteboard at Mama Lolo. That's great. So during that time, we thought about and talked with Unitarian Universalists that we thought of, you know, it was just sort of this fuzzy idea. We thought, okay, who would we think of as mature in their Unitarian Universalist faith? And then we tried to notice how they acted. And who were they in relationship with? How they spoke about and used their faith in their everyday lives? The roles that they played in the church, and also in their families, in the community. And we asked them about the path that led them to where they are today, the sorts of experiences that had shaped them. We also talked to people that were new to Unitarian Universalism of all ages and tried to get a better understanding of what you might call a starting point. So we started to imagine here, like, the journey. From all this, we came up with two tools. The first describes the what of growing in faith as a Unitarian Universalist. That is, the what does it mean to grow in faith as a Unitarian Universalist? We knew that there's no language that works for everyone, so if that's a little uncomfortable, remember. But go back to the other one. What we came up with is that to grow in faith as a Unitarian Universalist is to be drawn into partnership with courageous love and to be faithful to its call. And then we came up with some 5 ways that we thought that this might manifest and that you might be journeying in your lifetime as a Unitarian Universalist, like kind of like core competencies behind the big vision. So first, the first one is to grow in yourself, to grow in your self-awareness, your self-differentiation, your compassion and empathy, your discernment and clarity about your call, your life's purpose, and then your ability to live out that purpose. Second, to be rooted in the Unitarian Universalist tradition somehow, to be growing in your connection to our history, our theology, our practices, and covenant. Third, to be a part of building the beloved community, which is to be growing towards difference, to serve, to bear witness, to grow in your capacity to listen to others, to learn and work for justice. Fourth, to experience mystery and awe. It sounds simple. It may be the hardest one. And finally, to engage all these things in the practice of our faith community, to worship and learn and serve and grow in friendship and generosity together on behalf of all these other goals and care together. The order, by the way, is not important. There will always be some things that are more for you and less for somebody else, something you're more drawn to than another. But I'd also invite you to recognize those places where you've spent little to no time in on your path so far and see about finding more of those experiences because they may be your zone of proximal development. The other tool that we came up with describes a journey that it does take from as you begin into a sense of maturity and faith. If you've been to our Base Camp series for newcomers, you'd be familiar with this. But basically, it's just a way to consider where you are in your path of growing in your faith. We'll be rolling this out all in all sorts of places over the course of the church year, but you're always welcome to join us in Base Camp, even if you're not a newcomer. One of the greatest insights from that great workshop, though, was their assertion that people grow in their faith not through programs or classes or reading, those are all fine, but the main way that people grow in faith is through relationships, mentors and friends and guides, people who act as companions, especially in some of life's more difficult places, the people who help you find your way. This is the flaw of this graphic, by the way, because according to the real zone of proximal development theory, not only must there be the right amount of discomfort for learning to happen, but there also needs to be helpers and teachers there with you when you're in that zone, people who can help support you and cheer you on, people who can remind you that it's okay and why it's worth it to take the next step. We found this bears out in our church, too, by the way. Everyone that we talked to spoke about the importance of relationships in their spiritual path, how critical friendships were in order for that growth to really happen. Especially, we found that was true in life's most transitional moments, moments of change or flux, loss and transition. The presence of others in these kinds of moments, presence of others from the faith community or from Foothills, those were often those places that would make the difference between someone growing as a result of those experiences or withdrawing, connecting or closing off. This is where pastoral care and the heart of faith formation connect, and why we realize that friends and our covenant are actually the drivers of all of our becoming. Not too long in those gatherings, when you hear those whisperings of, do we really want to grow? Usually, if you keep listening, at some point, you'll hear the response from somebody else. But who would we want to turn away? Numerical growth is not, in and of itself, a faithful goal. But oftentimes, when we're growing in our faith, numerical growth is the outcome. Because a people discovering what they care about and then living according to that vision is powerful and catching, even at the coffee shop. And it also leads to questions like, who would we turn away? The problem comes, of course, when we don't create the systems and structures that would match the numbers, and when the numbers then in turn become an obstacle to that growing in faith and fulfilling our mission. But that doesn't have to be the case. The systems and the structures and the building and the ways that we incarnate in the world can all work together to align and enable even more of a sense of connection and intimacy and belonging and continue to be the engine, the power that allows us to keep growing and to fulfill our mission. In her interview with Krista Tippett, Joanna Macy describes her encounter with that poem that Sean read, Widening Circles. It was, as she says, the moment, her first encounter with it was the moment when the idea of spiritual growth broke open for her. After many years of longing for a more spiritual way to understand her life and her work, and yet consistently finding herself unable to engage traditional notions and voices of religion, she found this poem and a way in. As an ecologist, she heard there an invitation to give herself to something greater, not yet knowing the outcome or exactly what part her life would be playing. Am I a falcon, a storm, or a great song? She felt herself being willing to be pulled into a larger longing, something ancient and yet enduring, to commit to a journey of growth, a path of receiving everything and yet letting everything go. These are days when so many of us are seeking sanctuary. So many of us in this room are seeking sanctuary, that safe place. And yet that same reality of our lives today challenges us to ask ourselves, what are we being made safe for? What widening circle calls to us, and to what will we give ourselves to with abandon? In these days, the power of this community reminds us that we need not choose between these two extremes, but rather we can be sanctuary for each other. We can be those helpers along the way, creating a safe place for us to be uncomfortable, confused, disoriented, and growing. Leaning into all the magic that we make possible by our journey together. May it be so, and amen.